head toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
And if you're headed out like Lizzo, you grab your cell phone, your keys, and your mask. And if you don't have a WBAI mask yet, call 516-620-3602 and order one in white or black. 516-620-3602 for a contribution of $35 to this listener-sponsored non-corporate radio station. These masks are cool. They're in black or white. They're 100% cotton. They have the Say and Keep Free Speech Radio alive on them. And remember, when you head out the door, you grab your keys, you grab your cell phone, you check yourself, and you grab your mask, and you put it on.
And it's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI in New York. Coming up next, Untitled with Malika Lee Whitney. Stay tuned.
As mentioned, Malika Lee Whitney, the program Untitled. Tonight, well, I first have to acknowledge the sounds you're hearing. That's our music bed from our theme song, Rivers on Mars. Special guest this evening, Kristen Imani Spencer, playwright, Inez Newby from Watermark Communities, and we'll be talking about Not Another Second. Focus on film, The United States versus Billie Holiday, One Night in Miami, and we'll hear commentary with Cal Jones, historian and researcher. So stay tuned. It's going to be all the way live. And as an introduction to our first guest, we're going to hear from Rob Bass, DJ Easy Rock. DJ Easy Rock, I should say. It Takes Two. It's one of the most popular tracks you're likely to hear when the feet are playing syncopated rhythms that accompany Double Dutch. Stay tuned. Here we go. Good evening.
Hello.
As I mentioned, those sounds I've heard year after year after year at a very special event. that you will share with us momentarily, but let me get some important information out first so I don't have to rush through the end of the program for certain details. Brave New World Repertory Theater presents New Works 2021. Claire Beckman, producing artistic director, presents a Zoom presentation. And there'll be three of them, three plays that look at police brutality and reform. But our guest this evening tonight, as I mentioned, is the playwright for one in the series of plays that will be shared virtually. And the production is called Dutch King. So I'm really happy to welcome you to listener-sponsored WBAI Radio. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My first question out the box, folks like to be recognized when they hear your voice, and maybe you might mention town and country and school just so they know like it's really you.
Oh, sure. I am Kristen Imani Spencer calling in from Valley Stream, Long Island. I am an MFA playwright at Columbia University School of the Arts. I'm going to be graduating this year. And I'm in the U.S., in New York.
Sounds good. So give us a little background about Dutch Kings and what was the genesis and inspiration for writing it and preparing
it
for the stage or the box, as it were.
So the play itself actually came out of a short assignment that was assigned to us by our professor, Lynn Nottage, for her American Spectacle class, and she had taken us to a drag show. And the assignment after we left was to create a scene in which characters had to solve a conflict through movement. So that was the only criteria that we got. Everything else was up to us. And I was like, well, let's just see what happens if I make boys double dutch. And so the only part of the play that was written at that time was just the competition portion. But then I realized, like, with the heightened theatricality and just the language of it, I just felt it was necessary to finish writing the play and build out the world as much as possible. And it's just become this wonderful thing that has been a source of representation on stage, a source of just a product of my love for Black men and Black culture in general, and rap culture. So it's all of those things combined, for sure.
And your experience with the artistic and creative expression known as double dutch?
Yeah, I grew up double dutching. Actually, shout out to Miss Teresa if you're listening right now. She is one of our neighbors and really close family friends. And she actually taught me and a bunch of our other friends how to double dutch. It just came out of, like, being in the summertime and us needing something to do and stuff, and it just became that. And then I took that and then brought it to summer camp, and we would just dutch all day long in the burning, burning heat of the summertime. So it was not only just something to do, but it also gave us a sense of community in a lot of ways. And so I just love it. I love the rhythm of it. Yeah.
Were you all part of an official team, like with any of the major leagues, like the National Double Dutch League or the American Double Dutch League? And there are several others, of course.
Not at all. We were no team, just kids getting together and jumping. That's it.
Did your jumping include rhymes, and were they original rhymes, or were you sharing the ones that are usually passed down through generations?
I would say generally the ones that are passed down through generations. We never really came up with things on the spot from what I could remember. But, I believe it was definitely a lot of stuff that was just passed down.
So some of what I read in terms of the males being part of the sport, and that's not unusual, you know, not as frequently on view. So I'm curious, as I'm sure our listeners are, in terms of how you wrap the ropes around some of the social issues and the dynamics of their interactions and concerns about neighborhood and community to have this piece evolve?
Yeah. Now, I think what struck me as interesting about writing this play is the fact that it's not just, I remember reading an article kind of about how rap artists, a lot of what we call rap culture comes out of those nursery rhymes from girls double dutching. A lot of the rhythm of it is rooted in double dutch. A lot of the nursery rhymey kind of thing going on is all rooted in double dutch and schoolyard rhyme. And so that is such a coded language, I believe, specific to Black women, more so in my, at least in my community and in my own circles. But I think there was something really interesting about having the boys who used to watch the girls and kind of wish they were doing that, but not really wanting to, like, either invade that space or admit that they wanted to do the girl thing. And so I was like, oh, that's an interesting dynamic. And now as far as ropes are concerned as a metaphor throughout the play, I think it's really high time that we take back that metaphor and that we don't die by rope on this stage, that we live by the rope, that it's a source of joy, it's a source of love, it's a source of connection between these men and young boys. And I believe that rope as a signifier for community rather than something dark as we usually see it on stage is really important.
In terms of some of the social issues that surround community that happen while that expression of free movement and connectedness happen, life happens in the areas where they happen to be. So can you will you kind of share like an example of the social dynamic that perhaps the young males were contending with?
Sure. So the basis of the play is around four young men, and two of them have happened to move to a place called Uptown. It's not specified in the play where Uptown exactly is, but Uptown in the idea of moving on up, like we've gotten off the streets, we're out of the ghetto, we're out of the dark. Now we're here in this new environment that is mainly built for the protection of white people and out of the idea of gentrification of an area. And so now on this particular day in this play, these two young boys that have moved uptown are now coming back downtown to compete in this competition, this annual competition with their two other friends. And the dynamics between the two groups of boys, it's visited throughout the play in multiple times, but I think the biggest overarching metaphor is that there's a point in the play where one of the characters says, you can't outrun the block. The block's about to outrun you. And I think that's so important because of the fact that for whatever reason, it feels like these boys are cursed wherever they go, whether they're uptown, downtown, there's a line in the play, everybody's trying to kill us, whether it's by police hands, by their own hands, by a peer's hands. It just seems like there's a cycle of hurt, pain, and in ultimate cases, death of Black men on these streets. And the social environment that they're growing up in, where it's like built in fear and built out of this idea of being in a neighborhood that is just not supporting really anything other than you staying there. I think that has a lot to do with the play and is expressed a lot through it.
I want to ask this, with all this going on, I would imagine your original vision might have been for a quote-unquote live presentation. Talk briefly, if you will, about the transition to playing it in a box. And we should also mention that making this happen, please mention your director's name. Certainly
sure.
I want to acknowledge him as well.
Yeah. Christopher D. Betts is my director. He is going to be a graduate of Yale University's program for directing and theater. And he's just incredible. He has really turned this thing out in ways that I would have never imagined. And the piece itself, as you probably could assume, is highly physical and very, very rooted in rhythm and pace. And so that's very difficult to do on a Zoom platform.
But, exactly.
Yeah, very difficult.
So I don't want you to give away too much because we want to leave what's likely to take place on Sunday, actually, 7 p.m. Sunday, January 31st. And I want to get this in because it's important that folks know how they can find out more about it. My guest this evening, as I mentioned, is a playwright of the presentation called Dutch Kings. And if you want to find out more about it, you can go to bravenewworldrep.org. Once again, that's bravenewworldrep.org. And the virtual presentation takes place 7 p.m. Sunday, January 31st. In another conversation, I don't know if it was shared with you already, but I'm deeply involved in Double Dutch.
I did my research. I looked you up. I know.
Okay. So I'm having to restrain myself because it's really about you. It's really about the work and all the other amazing new works that are going to be part of the series happening this month, January, also February, and in March. So I want to say a special thanks to Jasper Magruder, who first shared the information with me, and Claire Beckman, producing artistic director of Brave New World Repertory. So listeners, please check this out. You know how much I love Double Dutch. 7 p.m. Sunday, January 31st, and you can go to the website, bravenewworldrep.org. I want to thank you so much. I wish we had a lot more time.
Thank you.
Only an hour,
I know.
And I have a pretty stacked show. So
awesome.
We'll connect, and I'll just leave it there. We will definitely connect. So all my best to all the cast members. Look forward to seeing them as well. So we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much. WBAI Radio. New York, 99.5 FM on your dial and streaming worldwide at WBAI.org. Stay tuned. There's much more to come. Max is here on the ones and twos. We missed him last week, but he's here in fine form. So stay with us. Of your first name?
Yes, it's Ines.
Ines. All right, we have Ines Newby on the line. She's strategic marketing and creative director for the Watermark Retirement Community, and very much connected to an exhibit that I'm really looking forward to seeing, and it's entitled Not Another Second. I'm sure curiosity is rising in the minds of some. So tell us first the title and its meaning. And I've also been doing a lot of reading about the Watermark Community's programming, and it's absolutely amazing. So I will leave you to describe what Not Another Second is all about and some questions that I have for you about the exhibition.
Yeah, absolutely. So Not Another Second, it was actually inspired by Watermark Retirement Community's commitment to becoming Sage Care Platinum accredited, which Sage is an organization, it's actually the largest and oldest organization in the U.S. that's committed to dedicating to improving the lives of LGBT elders. So we partnered with them to go through their training process in order to provide an environment in our communities that are free of discrimination and also providing a better work life, a work environment for associates and also a better just overall life for the residents within our communities. And in doing so, we released a press release in June of 2019. And in this press release, we featured a couple of residents who are part of the LGBT community and live at our communities. And one of them was speaking about how he came out much later in life and how he lost a lot of years not being his authentic self. And so that was really inspired a creative agency that we work with that's based out of New York, RXM Creative. They came up with the concept, and it really just inspired us to share these stories of seniors, of elders that have dealt with many hardships in their lives, many sacrifices, and even still have many ongoing challenges with being an LGBT elder. So that's, and the exhibit is, it features 12 people from all walks of life, from all over the U.S., you know, from coast to coast. And we pretty much share their stories, highlighting the challenges that they had, the sacrifices, and acknowledging their contributions to the LGBT community and all the progress that has been made, and then celebrating their beauty and humanity. And it also allows them to share their wisdom to serve as a rallying cry to younger generations to advocate for a more accepting future.
Well, you sound like you've read my notes. Of course, when I do get the press materials, I like to you know, convey it in a way that really brings individuals in who would have the opportunity to see it. And sure. It's described as an AR presentation, so I'm aware, but share with our listeners what exactly that means. I know it's audio and visual, but I'm sure there's some language that would give it even more clarity.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the exhibit, it's interactive. It houses 12 portraits of the, I'm sorry, 22 portraits of the 12 participants in the project, and then also has their stories via video. And so when you're walking through the exhibit, you can listen and watch to all the stories, and you can do that via tablet that are throughout the exhibit, and you can watch and put headphones on and watch and listen that way. Or a second option is you can download an app, which is provided by Kaleida Studio. And the app, it takes maybe 1 to 2 minutes max to download. And then you have the technology on your phone where you can actually scan the portraits in the exhibit, and on your phone, the video stories will play. So that way you don't have to use the tablets or the headphones at the actual exhibit, but you can walk through the exhibit and listen to all the stories directly on your phone.
Now, this particular location is in Brooklyn, and the Watermark Retirement Community has other sites. So is this the inaugural exhibition for this, and is it going to other places?
Exactly. Yep. So we just, the exhibit opened to the public 10 days ago on January 19th. And originally it was supposed to go through March, end of March, but we actually just today, this is the latest news, we just extended it through May because we actually sold out of all the tickets. Mm-hmm. Which the tickets are free, so it's just reserving a time ticket. And from now through March, they're all sold out. So we actually extended it for 2 additional months, and we're going to add additional tickets to Eventbrite within the next 24 hours. So giving an opportunity for additional people to view the exhibit. And then after its conclusion at the community in Brooklyn Heights at the end of May, then it will travel to the West Coast, to Los Angeles, Napa Valley, and then in the late fall and winter, it will travel to Tucson, Arizona.
Now, the whole concept of having this art life where one lives, I'm sure it's not entirely unique, but your approach to it seems to be on so many levels. First and more importantly, I think, for the fact that there is so often not enough attention given to the wisdom keepers, you know, however they decide to live and love, and to have them embraced in a way that allows that expression of who they know they are and have really, you know, lived through times of non-acceptance is really a beautiful thing. You know, it's human is what it is more than anything else.
Right.
So
yep.
For Watermark taking on a project like this, hopefully it becomes something that serves as a model for the way we ought to be living, you know, surrounded by love, surrounded by all the joys and beauty of life. And I actually played Kevin Nathaniel's Spirit of Joy because I thought it was very appropriate from his CD entitled Embira Sanctuary. So all that to say, being a woman of a certain age myself, it's really wonderful to hear that. And I also work with seniors and have for many, many years doing oral history projects. So the words of the 12 participants, is it? Are
yes,
so
12.
Strong and so warm and so touching and so real. And please, I want to make sure I pronounce his name correctly. The photographer is Carsten?
Carsten. Yep, Carsten Termalen.
Yes, German photographer was mentioned. Yep. So is he someone that you've worked with in the past? Is he centrally located here? And will he be there or will someone be there as people decide to sign up when they can to see the program? Or is it a self-guided presentation?
It's a self-guided tour. We allow public viewing 3 times a week, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And then there's 2 time slots each day and 10 people max per time slot, just given the current conditions with, you know, the pandemic. Everything's very controlled. But, yeah, it's very much a self-guided tour. Carsten is actually based in Germany. He flew out to the U.S. for this project, capturing all of the participants with still photography. And we actually had no experience with working with him prior to this project, but we sought him out because he actually specializes in capturing portraits of centenarians, you know, people that are over 100 years old. And I believe he's actually shot 2 that were at the time the oldest people in the world.
Oh.
So he's a very just exceptional photographer. So, you know, we gave him a call and told him about the project, and he was very, very excited about it. So he flew to the U.S., and we spent a week capturing these beautiful portraits that you can see in the exhibit.
Great. If you're just joining us, you missed a whole heap, I usually say. Not another second. Inez Newby, strategic marketing and creative director for this really beautifully conceptualized project, and I was really pleased to hear that there is an extension of time for folks to have an opportunity to come and see it. So there's also a book of the photos. Is it already published or about to be?
It is published, so you can either purchase it at the exhibit when you attend, or you can also purchase it online at notanothersecond.com. And so the exhibit has 22 portraits. The book has over 100, and also is the extended version of each story that you're only going to get in the book. And all proceeds of the book will be donated to help support LGBT plus young people.
Great. One more time, the best contact for listeners to be able to make arrangements to see the exhibition. And, you know, there's that short film that they can watch as well. So one more time, won't you, Ines?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to notanothersecond.com, not only can you watch, as you mentioned, the short documentary and also view some of the stories of the participants, but you can also reserve a ticket, a timed ticket. Each timed ticket is for 1.5 hours. And for Tuesday, Thursday, or Saturday from now through May. And that's notanothersecond.com.
Not Another Second, fighting for the right to be themselves, telling, I would say, untold truths of LGBT elders. It's inspiring and appealing across generations and definitely opening pathways for acceptance and respect. I want to thank you so much for joining us on WBAI New York.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And I have to give a nice recognition of Casey Peary and also to Aaron Feinstein, who responded to my outreach just seemingly a couple of hours ago. But I had something else planned, and when I saw information about this in my inbox, I said, okay, we have to make a change, and I'm glad I did. I appreciate you, and have a great evening. Bye for now.
Thank you
so much.
I'm
Malika Lee Whitney, and the program is Untitled, and you're tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM on your dial, and WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. And coming up, we're going to be talking about film. Stay tuned for a trailer.
Don't you know who this is?
She was thinking of something more special.
I'm downright flashy, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Billie Holiday.
Reporters keep asking me, Billie, why you do the things you do? This is what I tell them.
I love me.
We love you.
Why not take
on? NAACP says Billie Holiday is the voice of our people.
We should integrate the audience for this show.
Let's change it up a little bit. You know, blacks and whites sitting together.
You know what you're getting yourself into when you decide to come on the road.
Get out my goddamn clothes.
I'm gonna take everything except your bra and your man.
Which one of my songs is your favorite song?
Strange Fruit.
Yeah, it's a song about important things, you know. Things that are going on in the country.
This holiday woman's causing a lot of people to think the wrong things.
The starting gun for this so-called civil rights movement.
Those lyrics provoke people.
Y'all got a plan?
She's a drug addict.
Exactly. I cut strange fruit.
I want to sing the damn song.
It's for your own good, okay?
I sing it the fuck I want.
Get her off that stage.
They're strange fruit. They won't let me sing nowhere. No clubs, no money, no nothing. You gotta understand, baby. Right now, I'm in a situation.
But you said we could beat this, Billy.
I need some now. Blood on the leaves.
You're like a hammer. Come right back and hit harder than before.
She's singing it for all of us. Ain't no other Negro star bold enough to do it. Black body swinging. I'm being
being followed. I'm not gonna cower in no fears.
In the southern breeze.
She's made something of herself and you can't take it because she's strong, beautiful, and black.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree.
You think I'm gonna stop singing that song? Your grandkids will be singing Strange Fruit.
Director Lee Daniels, featuring Devante Rhodes, Andra Day, Lakeith Stanfield, and others. And just sharing this, it's another treatment of the life of an amazingly gifted, soul-stirring vocalist, this time portrayed by singer Andra Day. Noticeably striking is the resemblance feature-wise between Miss Holiday and Miss Day. Some are, of course, aware of the highs and lows in the life of Billie Holiday based on what she experienced, her personal life, racism, drugs, and, of course, the relentless pursuit of the FBI. Those same experiences were the source of how she performed Words with Music, a woman with deeply felt emotions that continue to resonate through generations, songs that are as current as today's times and serve to remind us about what's real. Let's just say Billie Holiday can move you, and that's what's necessary right now. We're going to move right into the next trailer, which is from the film One Night in Miami, directed by Regina King. Academy Award-winning Regina King. Stay tuned, WBAI Radio.
You brothers, you could move mountains without lifting a finger.
Minister Malcolm X.
Good news, the chariot is coming.
Who's the greatest?
You are!
That's right.
Jim Brown takes the ball.
Your record is going to stand the test of time.
All together, yeah.
The entire city of Miami is celebrating.
I'm the new heavyweight champion of the world, and I don't even have a scratch on my face.
Oh, my goodness.
Cash. Sean Cash?
Why am I so pretty?
Hey, congratulations, champ.
I could get used to that.
I was made in America, land of the free, home of the brave.
This movement that we are in is called a struggle.
Because we are fighting for our lives.
Welcome to America.
This ain't about civil rights.
Welcome to America.
They ain't giving black people what they really want.
What's that?
Hey, I was made in America. That's why I'm out here slave in America.
Power.
Black power.
I like the sound of that.
I wish I lived in America.
We have to be there for each other.
Heard everybody rich. All I gotta do is run, jump, kick. I'm a kick in your area. I done made it to America. I'm amazed at America. Welcome to America.
One Night in Miami, directed by Regina King. It's a dramatization of a gathering of very high-profile championship boxer, music entertainers, Sam Cooke, Jim Brown, each representing ideals that influence and speak to the need for change. So keep your eyes open for that one. And what did I say was coming up next? Pay attention, Miss Whitney. Max, can you hit that cart while I go through some paperwork, and then we'll get ready for the next segment. And hopefully I'm not hitting you with too much of a surprise.
The value of this radio station in a time like this cannot be overstated. Our progressive programming, covering arts and culture, public affairs, social and political issues, means so much to many. And that includes you, right? Support WBAI to ensure our impact and continued longevity for a time like this.
Now Well, it's time for me to prepare an introduction for our next guest. And I thought a little bit of Stevie Wonder's Higher Ground would be a perfect companion to all of these international artists from around the world and their interpretations of Higher Ground. And we'll bring on our guest commentator for this edition of Untitled. He is Cal Jones, historian and researcher. And, oh, do we have things to talk about, pardons and priorities and chaos and the capital and so much more. Higher Ground, international artist. And it's part of a project called Playing for Change. And there's musicians from Mali, Brazil, South Africa, Japan, Jamaica, Detroit, Los Angeles, the Netherlands, and other places far and wide. So, Higher Ground. Not as much of it, because I want to get right to Cal Jones, but enough to know it's Stevie. Commentator is on the line, so welcome. Not a stranger to these airwaves, and I really appreciate you making yourself available. I'm going to just throw out a couple of thoughts, and you pick it up wherever you wish, because there's so much to talk about in the time that we have. I mentioned priorities, and I'm sure the agenda for the new administration will definitely be a busy one. And a brief reflection on the chaos in the Capitol. I have on my list Cruz, McCarthy, Hawley. Oh, dear, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Poor thing. Cori Bush would really have taken care of her. That's the sister newly appointed from Missouri. And I heard something this evening which bothered me. Or maybe I wasn't aware that the number was so small, that there's only been 11 black senators, but that's obviously visible when you see them all.
11 senators at what? I missed that.
That, you know, over a long period of time, you know, becoming members of Congress.
Yeah.
So I will leave it there. Of course, QAnon and the one that I call the Grim Dripper. That's the new name that I've given to Giuliani, you know, when he had that makeup faux pas. And the rise of the Confederacy. Last. One more thing. Why is it that what was supposed to be set in stone, which I know it's not in terms of how things are supposed to be governed as relates to the Constitution, all this reinterpretation? I'm done.
Okay, well, if I don't address everything that you raised, just call my attention to it, too, okay?
It's your
turn.
But
I'd like to start by saying to all of my brothers and sisters, congratulations, and thanking them for fighting a good fight that we won. But this is just one fight. This is the beginning. I think that what it's done, this election, and I'm starting at that point, I think has put into focus really what problems we have to deal with. There's been a large number of people overlooking and ignoring and not identifying what's been happening. But I think for the last decade or more, we've been on the precipice of civil war. And I think that after this, well, we'll start with the election. During the election, what was happening was the then president, Trump, had his lackeys do everything from kill the mail, slow down the mailbox, the mail, the voting, everything he could possibly do to obstruct the election. And then he'd state all along that he thought it would be obstructed, but by someone else. But he was doing in every move he made. I thought that we would win it if he didn't steal it. And every step that we took towards resolving who was to be president, he tried to steal it. And you can't overlook. Matter of fact, we'll go from winning the election, the Democratic Party winning the election and Biden winning it, on to our fabulous victory in Georgia. And I have to say, take off my hat to the sisters and the brothers and all of our relatives and friends and Americans that recognize that this election had America or democracy on its deathbed. Now, having said that, come January 6th, I think that was the attempted funeral. And I think that I'm not so sure that the funeral service is over. I don't think the body arrived. I think we stopped it, and I'll be a little more explicit. Yes, there was a put down of this insurrection, but you have what appears to be evidence of congressmen involved, legislators involved, governors involved, and so just removing Trump, and he hasn't really been removed. They just took his Twitter away from him. But they're still paying homage to him. I think that we should be preparing for every single election, not just wait for the presidential where we turn out in mass, but every local election, because that's where it's built up. They've gerrymandered the districts. We have to move into the state houses. We have to get the state legislative spots, because they're the ones that are changing the state laws. They're the ones that are gerrymandering the districts so that they don't need a majority to win the majority of the state. And we have to keep an eye on now people, as a result of the 2020 election, really see all the obstacles that we as black folk have seen all along. The gerrymandering of the districts, you know, making it difficult to vote or places to reach. And what they've done, and I think over the last, was it seven presidential elections or something like that? We, the Democrats, rather, had the largest number of votes, and yet we didn't win the largest number of offices. But anyway, and now,
of the popular votes, right?
Pardon?
Of the popular votes.
Yes, yes, the popular votes. So thanks for that clarification. But now what we have is where Donald Trump has reached out and stoked the fires, and it's like taking the scab off and all the pus is coming out now. These people are out in the open. He's given legitimacy to all of these militias and all of these different groups that we knew existed all along. Matter of fact, he sort of suppressed giving it priority that it needed, as we know. But they're still there, and they're waiting for a new leader. And he's still their leader in chief, although he's not president anymore. But we are still in danger in terms of a democracy. You have now elected to Congress a lot of these loose nuts, you know, everywhere from the QAnon and people associated with the Proud Boys. And we have in the Senate those who behave and follow a lot of their dogma, representing their groups sitting in Congress. And the next time they try, what they're trying to do is legitimize their illegitimate activities. And now we see them taking on the role of going out and campaigning, little Trumpsters. And when one of their numbers gets out of line in their own party, they're checking them. So we, as citizens, not to mention as black citizens, now I see a lot of our white brothers and sisters in yellow and brown and all recognize, you know, they're coming for them too. What they're looking to build is, I think, a white fascist state. You know, the Aryan race like Hitler. And this country is just about at the same place that Germany was back in the 30s.
Would you speak to the plans for impeachment?
Could you speak a little louder, dear?
Yes, I was saying to you, would you address the dynamics of the proposed impeachment hearings?
Well, sure. I know there's been some clamor about what's the point to have him impeached because he is already out of office. Well, not to mention that McConnell was very slick in talking him into putting off the starting of the impeachment, so now that he's not in office. But it's not about whether he's in office or not, even though there is evidence and history that many people have been impeached, officials have been impeached after they were out of office. But what's important, I think, whether he, and there are those that say, well, you're not going to convict him anyhow because you can't get 17 votes. Well, that's beside the point. I think what is important is that you have a trial and that what should come out in a trial, allow some of the sisters like Maxine Waters and AOC and all the rest of them to put in the record some of what's been happening now so that it's down in history. Okay, sure, they got the votes, but we should make it known all of what's been happening. And even if they are not convicted and even if they don't sanction certain senators and congressmen, they should be called up if there's any kind of connection to the mob, the insurrection mob in the street, and them. And there has been evidence, and every day I see it showing up. There's calls, there's telephone calls where they were calling different, the president was calling congressmen to tell them to hold on or delay. I mean, I think they have all of the evidence they need to convict him. But they have also the numbers so that he can be acquitted. But make them go through it. It should be a public trial because people have to be taught to understand that was insurrection and a democracy is only as strong as the people who have the power are willing to keep it.
Clear and so well spoken. Our guest commentator, Cal Jones, I reference as a historian and researcher, but he does a whole lot more. And I think the advisory of encouraging folks to continue in the election process in their communities or, you know, whether it's for relating to school, leadership, all the things that affect how we live. And I think you should just reiterate that one more time before we close.
Touch one, teach one.
Well said. An esteemed elder, I'm pleased to have had or continue to have a nice association and connection to your wisdom. I sincerely appreciate you and look forward to the next time you'll be available to share with us. You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI Radio, New York, 99.5 FM. And WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. We're going to come up with our theme song so that I can thank...
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Give my heartfelt appreciation for all those who joined us this evening. And Max, our theme will take us out as we get ready for the Harlem Connection in a few. And our guest, Kristen Imani Spencer, playwright, Dutch King. You gotta see it. I'm so curious to see how they're going to make it all happen inside the box. And it's a Brave New World Repertory Theater presentation, part of their New Works 2021 series. Another thank you to Inez Newby, Strategic Marketing and Creative Director. Sage Watermark Retirement Communities presents Not Another Second. So check that out. What else do we have here? Well, go see the films, I suggest, when they're ready for release, if they haven't been already. And next week we'll be talking about film and theater and art and music again. And I really want to thank you to AJ Muhammad, my muse, who makes sure that I know what's going on. And you want to check out that series of films that also are accompanied by great music from all around the world. And you'll be pleasantly surprised. You'll hear more of that from me in the days to come. And I have to thank Dear Gene. You know, we're sharing sides. That's what we just call music sides. So looks like my time is about a wrap. Thank you, Max Mead, for being on the ones and twos and keeping it going. Do support listener-sponsored WBAI Radio. It's in our interest, your interest, us's interest. So do that. Go to the website, WBAI.org, and find out how. It's a wrap for me. Thanks so much. Take care, all. Stay woke. Woke girl. No way.
James Irsay here. On Morning Irsay, that would be January 31st, from 8 to 10 a.m., we'll have a special guest, Mr. Henry Sapoznik. Henry's done some fascinating research into a very special Jewish cantor, that is, a Jewish liturgical singer. Back in the day, cantors also sang in Yiddish, the language of the Ashkenazim. The marquee names all made recordings, mostly on 78. Henry's brought to light a very special cantor. They called him in the Yiddish tongue, Der Schwarze Chazan, the Black Cantor. He was an African-American named Thomas LaRue Jones. He made recordings, and we'll hear them. Join us Sunday between 8 and 10 a.m. for Morning Irsay's special guest, Henry Sapoznik, right here on WBAI New York.
Whether you get up early on Saturday morning or stay up late on Friday night, we have good news for you.
Back of the Book, the only radio program that has endorsed hell, will be there for you every Saturday morning at 5 a.m.
Regular listeners will no longer have to figure out which Saturday morning is the alternate one. Back of the Book, every Saturday morning at 5, only here on WBAI New York.
My name is Roberto Mangual. I've been in shelter tenant for 2 years.
I've been homeless for over 4 years.
And I became homeless after I was illegally evicted.
The mayor of New York City is supposed to represent all New Yorkers, including those experiencing homelessness.
Everybody deserves a better life.
NIMBYism has no place in the city.
Elected officials need to be held accountable. which is why we're holding this first-of-its-kind mayoral candidates forum on homelessness. And this time, people who are directly impacted by homelessness will be asking the questions.
And my question to you as mayoral candidate...
My question tonight is simple. If you become mayor...
What will your administration do to change this?
Nothing like this has ever been done before. Usually, we're voiceless and choiceless. Today, we have a seat at the table. 10 candidates for mayor will be there. We hope you'll be there, too.
That's the Mayoral Candidates Forum on Homelessness, Thursday, February 4th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on WBA.